I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Sometimes golf is a pain in the butt. You hit your ball in the trees and then you lip out the putt. But if you've got a little time, and come and spend it with us. Cause now you're listening to The Rough Cut.
Hello, 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 and welcome down to what has been described as the best golf podcast this side of Mars. And we are recapping an absolutely fantastic week in Spain and the Solheim Cup, where Europe, spoiler alert, retained the trophy, kept it on European soil away from American hands. I am joined yet again by Jacob, by Kieran, and by Mick to recap a momentous week that we were actually there for as well, which makes a nice change. We were there in the flesh. We were there in person. We were getting in amongst it, as the kids say.
Half of us.
Half of us, yeah. Me and Jacob, these two weren't invited because they can't be controlled in large crowds. The restraining orders are still in place. So we're going to talk through all of that and a hell of a lot more, because we were there in Spain for a few days, but we got so much done. We saw so much and ate twice as much.
Yeah. The stories we've heard of your recent trip to the Costa del Sol mostly involve the things that you ate, and how late you stayed up and how early you had to get up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kieran would have actually had
this would have been right in your wheelhouse.
The only thing I can judge it off is turkey. More or less eating than turkey?
More eating. It was more eating than turkey, because when we went to Turkey, it was a lot of like amazing like buffets basically. Yeah. So you kind of controlled yourself.
Did I?
Yeah. Well,
mostly, you have control over how much you can put on your plate.
In Spain, it was mostly the chefs trying to kill us, like via feeding us too much. Yeah. Did you not see in Seven when they find that guy who's like just eating himself to death?
No.
It's basically that.
Amazing.
You don't need to watch it. Yeah.
I know the film now.
You got the film.
Yeah.
We were there. We were there with Visit Costa del Sol, who basically showed us just a fantastic time. It was, I would say, if you were a tourist, an incredible trip.
Yeah.
For me and Jacob, it maybe turned out to be a little bit too much because we were trying to like film everything as well. And the Spanish and a lot of continental Europe, for that matter, they eat their dinners a lot later. So, you know, if you're going out for a meal at like 10 o'clock, that's kind of normal. Like,
I should have been asleep for 2 hours. By then.
So we were up very early in the mornings to go play golf, which we'll get into in a moment. So we ended up like literally getting into bed after midnight, up at six every morning. So that for like 4 days with travel in between was a bit of a, we were tired by the end of it.
I just want to say every morning that we were there, I was not late. And Pete was the late one.
I was there every time.
It's quite a surprise.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, there are ongoing jokes about each of us in the office. It's not even a joke really, but Jacob is often late. Like, he loves to be in bed more than he loves to live the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually really impressive.
Yeah.
That's actually really
so,
good.
Classically, you know, when he walked onto the bus for the first time, I had to drop him a good afternoon.
Oh, but, yeah. That's yeah. Pete's favorite line. If you turn up, you know, we try and aim to be here 9 o'clock. If you turn up 9:15, you'll get an afternoon.
Yeah.
Nice of you to join us.
I mean, listen, I know for a fact that a lot of people listening to this who run companies have just said 9:15.
Yeah.
And you let them get away with it. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm a nice guy. And we always tend to work a little bit later.
We'll say,
so
like,
I'm a little bit flexible.
It wasn't like he was walking on the bus half an hour late. Like, we needed to leave at 7. He was arriving at like 7:06.
So he was late.
So it, well, but yeah, obviously in my eyes, I'm not too worried about that kind of stuff. But Ida and Marta, who were looking after us, they did a very good job of it. They were on it. If you were not there at the time, they dropped you a message like, we are waiting for you, Peter Finch.
I just wanted the message.
Full named you.
I just wanted to feel special.
Kieran, what time do we normally get to the office?
It ranges from any time between sort of 7 till 8:30 sort of time.
Yeah. What time do you normally get to the office, Jacob?
9:15.
So absolutely, there's going to be any lectures about lateness, direct them that way.
Listen, I think everyone here is in full agreement. We don't need to talk about this anymore. Jacob is abed.
Pete needs
bed
to get bug. Up earlier.
Jacob is abed. Jacob is abed.
Jacob is
abed. I wish I could be abed.
And I won't say Jacob's abed. I think Jacob's basically a duvet.
Yeah.
Like, because he's not the bed, he just refuses to leave the bed.
Yeah.
Okay, got you.
Until it's dragged down onto the couch on like a rainy Sunday.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's weirdest analogy of all time, but yeah, great.
There we go. We went with it. We were over in Spain where there's a couple of people that you might recognize from channel with Hannah Gregg and Frederick Lindblom. We also met Arnaud Siri and Tobias Lehman as well, who were a couple of golf hashtag influencers. And we had an amazing few days. We basically got in there. When was it? It was only like 4 days ago. Mm. But it seems like 4 weeks.
Yes, it was.
It was like crammed so much in.
We flew on Friday.
Yep. Yeah.
So we flew on Friday. The first day of the Solheim Cup was the Friday. So we didn't get to see any of the action. Then we went straight out and played the golf course, which I still can't pronounce.
I think it's like Guadalhorce. Guadalhorce.
That'll do.
Is it on the board behind me?
No.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. But it's not that I can't say that word. It's the how is it actually pronounced in Spanish? Yeah, yeah. That's the problem. I can't remember what they said.
Anytime like I see anything in Spanish, my mind is like automatically going to like a Narcos accent.
God's sake.
You know what I mean? Like,
isn't Narcos based in Mexico?
No, it's Colombia.
Oh.
South America. But everything's like really like, very overemphasized. I'm terrible with accents and foreign languages in general.
You can do Northern quite well.
Yeah, I'm from the North.
I'm just saying.
That's just how I speak. So basically what you're saying is you can speak okay in your own dialect.
What about like your dad?
Yeah, he is unpronounceable. So we got in there. We played the course that I can't pronounce, which was lovely. I went straight out to a restaurant, almost died. And then it carried on like that for a while.
Yeah. So it was wake up very early, go and play golf, and then get shuttled off to some Solheim action, and then go and eat until your, you know, Augustus Gloop.
Basically, yeah. And until... It was the next day, essentially, and then you go to bed.
And does that not sound incredible?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was amazing.
It has to be said that, like, the whole experience, like I said, was amazing. But, like, by then, we were just like...
It was the timings. It was the late starts, early mornings. Mm-hmm. It just got to us by the fourth day.
It's kind of one of those things where if somebody was telling you this, you have every right to feel no sympathy, and nor should you.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't feel... I'm really sorry. You got fed and looked after in Spain.
Wait till we tell you about the second hotel we stayed in. The first hotel we stayed in, we were in for a bit of a Spanish awakening.
Yes.
It was obviously quite a long day, travel. Get into the room, and we're like... like, behind the curtains in the window, it's like open the patio doors and there's a full-blown concert going on.
Now,
like,
was it the Cheeky Girls?
It wasn't the Cheeky Girls.
Last Ketchup.
Last Ketchup.
It's just basically just like hundreds of families just dancing around and this Spanish band just going mad on stage. I was like, I don't know if I can deal with this right now. So I sat out and watched.
Phoned your agent.
Phone David. Yeah. David,
get us out of this hotel.
David, phone the hotel.
Tell him to turn it off.
But that fortunately finished just after midnight. But yeah, it was an interesting awakening. And then the second day, we finally got to go. We got to go to the Solheim Cup after playing Marbella Golf and Country Club in the morning. Filmed a couple of videos there. That was nice.
Yeah. How was your golf?
It was pretty consistent with how I've been recently. Let's put it that way.
Okay. And
inconsistent.
People have seen, by now, people have seen the BMW Pro-Am video. Mm-hmm. So they know that you're driving the ball well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They know that you're putting okay. They know that you can't find the middle of your irons to save your life.
Well, I mean, as everyone has probably mentioned recently in videos, and I've noticed this quite a lot, and it's a fair comment. Like saying, oh, you know, you're never going to be consistent if you keep changing clubs.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
And so, you know, after the last time we played properly, Walton Heath, with my own clubs, a video coming very soon, played very well. I thought the best thing to do would be completely change my bag and take a different set of clubs to Spain. Yeah.
The problem with testing clubs is that you're never...
New irons, new wedges, new putter.
Two new putts, actually. But this is the thing, so...
When we go
away to these trips, like I often take a whole different set of clubs and bags because we're doing club testing along the way. So that is why, before anybody gets kind of crazy.
It often looks like, you know, when you're going through driver testing at the beginning of the year, that kind of trend continues throughout the year and people must just be like, people must have this understanding that you're always tinkering with your bag. But in fact, what's actually happening is we're just testing things that came out.
It's for content. Yeah. It's not to irritate, though it may seem that way.
Yeah, Pete's not dissatisfied with the It's a Bory Irons. He's just got to test other stuff. So.
You also went quite the distance from going from a Stealth 2 back to that 20-year-old Titleist driver that you got given on the fairway down trip.
Yeah, I just want to rekindle. You just went to,
I wondered why that went. Why did that go to that trip?
I just thought, you know what? It went so well during that final round of fairway down. I thought, is it just like something that happened or is it actually still a really good driver? And it is actually still a really good driver.
Yeah, because we just released a video which is about mistakes not to make whilst, or is that out yet? Whilst buying a driver.
That's out.
So, and one of the things that was in that video was that, you know, it doesn't, just because it's a slightly older driver doesn't mean that it's lost, you know, the ability to hit the ball far as straight. So
I think most people kind of realize now that a driver which is 10-15 years old, when it's struck from the center, is gonna pretty much perform like modern drivers. Like the biggest advancement in modern drivers is the ball speed and forgiveness across the face. Like that's probably been the biggest step within the last kind of decade. That driver, which is what, 15-18 years old, like when you strike it from the center, still very good.
Yeah
It went well.
Yeah. And it looks good.
Yeah.
It's nice. Let's pull out a retro every now and again. that was out with me. Also the TaylorMade Mini Driver, which we did a little bit of like
what a club.
Social stuff on. Because it just keeps appearing in like tour players' bags.
Yeah.
It keeps popping up.
And it's very cool looking as well. Yeah, they've done a retrofit of a, you know, an old bubble driver, haven't they?
Oh yeah, we did all that for social as well.
Did you? Oh great.
You'll be pleased to know.
Oh nice.
Mate, half this trip was basically content for you.
Oh, brilliant.
And he's not even asked how it went.
So we're expecting virality in the next two weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
You sound like you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds thrilled. You're all right today.
I've got a bit of an upset tummy, so I don't feel
great. Here we go.
I don't feel great.
Well, we have been talking for probably the last month about there's going to be consequences to the amount that Kieran's eaten. Maybe finally the tapeworm in his stomach's gone.
Wow.
You know what?
I need to get out of it.
Even I'm full.
Good Lord.
Tapeworm in there is like a python now.
Please
like,
stop.
I need to get out. Do you feel a knocking?
Just churning. It's
been in circles in there.
Telltale sign. So we'll be back with Kieran's X-rays next episode, which is actually coming out tomorrow, which is the Ryder Cup preview.
Well, his X-rays.
Yeah, his X-rays. Yeah. We're going to have a very quick.
It's actually a rough cut special. It's the insides of every member of the rough cut.
Oh my God. Man.
I mean, and Pete's getting a colonic, which is going to be really quite exciting.
I
mean,
I would say that my internals are being a mess. I think
dude,
Kieran's are definitely going to be a mess.
For anyone who drinks as much coffee as you, your internals are ruined.
I don't think I've actually got that many internals left. I think I've just got like a mine shaft.
You're kept held together by hope.
Yeah. Hope and determination.
One of the podcasts that I listened to, they did an episode where they all took a medical and then they got the doctor to come on.
Oh,
and they basically like
God.
Did like a scoring system of like wow. who won like the lowest cholesterol, who won this, that, the other, and went all the way around and who was like the healthiest basically.
We would need probably 6 months to prepare
yeah.
for that.
Yeah. Give ourselves some time.
I just think we need a team of doctors for David anyway.
That's true.
Just to assess everything.
That's true.
He already has a team of doctors anyway, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if you've got your GP on speed dial, it's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, you know you've got some issues.
Some ish.
First name basis.
Oh,
John, I need you.
Okay.
So speaking of upset tummies, talk us through the things that you ate one by one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The most important things.
Yeah.
So I would, shall we just go to, so for me, I think the highlight, all the food we ate there was great. I mean, like Spain is, for me, is obviously synonymous with, good word,
yeah.
With tapas and like
oh, yeah.
finger food. Basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Small plates.
And, yeah. And I love like cold like meats and cheese and bread. Like I was born definitely in the wrong century. Like put me in the 15th century where I'm just eating cold stuff, bread, bit salt, of, bit
nice,
of oil.
Nice bit of plague.
I'm done. Yeah, 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 I know. But you know, well, yeah, that's fine.
You can get over that.
Live fast, die young and all that.
Bring out your dead.
The plague. Do you know that's actually where that saying came from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Live fast, die young, off the plague.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on posters everywhere. Like, guy
it's
pointing.
It's coming to get you.
That's the segue. But I think probably my favourite meal of the trip was Nobu.
Yeah, I think it had
night.
To be.
Oh yeah, you're both fishy boys, aren't you?
So. I love it.
But they've got restaurants all over, or Mr. Nobu. I don't know who does it, but
or Mrs. Nobu.
Or Mrs. Nobu. Yeah, I've seen both. their restaurants everywhere. Like, I've never been in one before.
Yeah, it's a name it's that I've spent. Heard, but I never kind of. I thought I knew what it was, and it was sushi, and it was stunning.
Is it more of a like an American thing? I'm not sure we have one here.
No, we do. I think we have one in London, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's more European, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, but it's basically like a Japanese-based cuisine.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was unreal.
It was close to the sushi stuff we had at Finca. So that kind of thing where it was just plate after plate after plate.
Like a set menu sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was
19 courses of pure sushi madness.
Well, we had a guy join us, Joaquin, whose name was, he joined us, and he was explaining to me, because I was really hungry that night, as I usually am, but he put the first plate down in front of us and he was like, don't worry, like this is like one of 10, you'll be fine.
Wow.
And it kept going, and I think we finished off with like a, I don't know, I think it was Wagyu, was it? Was it just...
Wagyu beef in like a mushroom broth.
Oh, it sounds horrible.
Wow.
It was, honestly, mate, you didn't miss out.
No.
Except missing out in every single way possible.
That was really quite sad.
And then
the second hotel was what?
Oh, my God.
El Fuerte Marbella.
Yeah. So...
Okay.
We are lucky enough to get away to some places, and often because, you know, hashtag influencing, hashtag YouTubing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm only saying this, by the way, because at second restaurant, second night, Boho, we had an influencers menu. That's not sure what it was called.
Boho. I was trying to remember what it was called.
But yeah, El Fuerte. So we got in there and it just undergone like a big renovation. So everything was like brand spanking new. Then we got into our rooms. And I thought, this is nice. It's very big. Had a heated, like a Japanese toilet, like with a sprayer in there.
Oh, I love it.
Heated seat, you know, all the stuff. Yeah. So that's a big tick straight away.
Yeah.
Had a walk-in wet room for like the shower.
For murders.
Yeah. Had a bath in there as well. It was like, okay, fantastic.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Did you not notice that?
Mine was different.
You didn't have the influencer room. You had
Oh, and it was very close, but...
You had influencer's employee room,
Influencer light.
I didn't have that. I didn't have a bath.
They judged it on followers. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I didn't have a bath, you'll get to that.
If you had enough followers, they gave you a bath.
Yeah. My 919 didn't quite cut.
Come on, lads. So let's go and follow Jacob.
I need 1K.
Lads and lasses.
I think it might be an age thing. Oh, he's old. Give him a bath. But we went, like, obviously went through... Beautiful soft bed, obviously, you know, bathroom stuff. Had a wardrobe you opened, there was all the drinks in there. You went through to like your little sitting area, which had a nice table. It's literally bigger than my first two flats probably put together. And then you went out to the balcony. lovely sea view, and then right there to your right side, we've got a hot tub.
God's sake, what is this trip?
And I'm not talking like a mini hot tub, I'm talking like a
big
fat
hot tub.
So obviously, everyone who was on the trip had one of these in their rooms. So we got there on like the first day, and it was like, right, how many hours have we got to the restaurant? Like two. So all we had in like the WhatsApp group was just pictures of these hot tubs.
For God's
sake.
And it was, honestly, it was so nice. I really didn't want to leave that hotel.
Mm.
It's probably the nicest hotel I've stayed in quite a while. Beauty.
Are you now considering getting yourself a hot tub? Because I don't know if it would have the same kind of appeal in Didsbury.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, we were hot
the
tub.
The view aided it, I think.
Yeah, we're overlooking the Mediterranean. It was like beautiful sunshine. I must admit, on the last night, I kind of messed up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, you know, being the smart guy I am, we got all these like little toiletries with it. And it was like, bath salts, stuck them in, get my skin all nice and smooth, you know.
Okay.
And then I thought, right, well, I want to make a bit of a bubble bath.
Oh, bad idea.
So I got like the shower gel and just like poured it under when the tap was going.
Nope.
And it made really nice bubbles. Mm-hmm. It was fine. Then turned the hot tub on. So like the bubble, the jacuzzi fountain, whatever you call it.
The jets,
yeah. But then obviously the jets started to whip those bubbles up into quite a frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was lying in there, the bubbles started to get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Again, absolutely fine in isolation. There was a wind whipping off the Mediterranean. So if you were in Marbella 3 nights ago, and you wondered where the foam party was.
Where it was coming from.
It was basically off my hot tub on the second floor of this hotel.
Going to Pete's room, he's got glow sticks.
it was coming off in such a volume that it kind of made it pointless, like just not embracing it. So by then, I was just like throwing up into the air. And
he
like,
he created a foam party for Marbella.
And it was just, the thing is, it just kept coming. Like, I don't know what this shower gel was, but it contained bubbles. You know what I mean?
I could see it coming from a mile away. Mm. You know they put those things in your bathroom because you're supposed to use them in your bathroom.
No, they were by the second bath, obviously. You know, the hot tub second bath. My main bath in my room.
For God's sake.
So that was incredibly nice. But we kind of used that as the base as we went to the Solheim Cup. And I must admit, because we've been to Finca Cordsen before.
Correct.
November last year.
Yeah, we stayed at that hotel, which is definitely the nicest hotel I've ever stayed at. Unbelievable. And we've played the course, been around the course. And I think even then, we were a little bit concerned.
Yeah.
Like,
concerned about?
Well, it was a very similar vibe to what you guys have with Rome after coming back from there and having concerns of just logistical issues.
Oh.
Whether that be getting in and out for Rome or for Finca in particular, that's how good a spectator course is it going to be?
Right.
Because as us three know, when we went, it's almost in three tiers of valley. It kind of goes down and then comes back up again. And it's quite the walk. Mm. And it's not, there's certain parts of the course where you don't just find yourself there by accident. If you want to get there, you have to get there by walking to it. So it was definitely one that when we got there and kind of worked out how they were gonna allow that to happen, how many stands they were gonna be able to put up for one as well. Like, there's not many flat surfaces in the course.
Yeah, from the previous course vlog, it does look very like lots of waste areas.
Yeah.
Lots of bits where there's kind of like, you know, brush and shrubs, and do you just chop all that stuff down and put a stand there or what?
Lots of barrancas.
Barrancas.
A couple of barrancas, yeah. And I remember one of the big things as well when we filmed was walking off every green, you're always walking back up. Like, it was always a raise back up to the buggies. Like, every green was like put down into like a little sort of hollow. And that was, it was good for sitting on and spectator wise for that. But in terms of stands and things like that, there weren't that many. So not necessarily that wasn't a bad thing, because it means you could move around and, you know, try and get some vantage points here and there. But it was quite the walk. Yeah. It was quite the walk.
Like, when you go to like some courses you go to and it's a cart path course, this was a cart path course.
Right, got you.
Like, this is the type of course that if you had to walk it, like, you wouldn't play golf for the rest of the week. You'd be knackered.
Ah.
Like, properly shattered. And bear in mind that some of the players on the Solheim Cup, they were doing 36 holes in one day and walking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let alone them playing five matches if someone did, and then you do that in 3 days.
Like they were doing, let alone their caddies. Actually carrying everything.
Yeah, the foot joys are getting a real workout.
Yeah.
So like you had this massively like ravined course because like Jacob Spade, it's basically split into like three sections of like big ravines and like you got to so hilly. So and the actual access to the course as well for fans, for TV, for everything, it was a bit of a like, how's this going to work?
Yeah.
But as we got there, they did. I think they did probably the best possible job they could,
they could make
it work. Because like the atmosphere, the amount of fans that were there was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. I mean, I've not been to a Solheim Cup before. I've never been to a Ryder Cup before. I've never been to any kind of team golf event.
Wow.
So I didn't really know what to expect. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised. Yeah. It was a fantastic atmosphere.
It was brilliant, really was.
Well, that first tee was quite good as well. Like, you know, how everyone was getting up at like 5 a.m. in the morning to go and sort of sit there and, you know, cheer it all on with all the music and stuff like that. It looked really cool.
Yeah, it was cool. We only really got to properly see that on the Monday when we played it the day after, which we'll get onto. And they'd done a great job of that. I think we were quite surprised with the lack of like good scores on that hole. It seemed like it was a very parable hole when we thought actually there'll be more birdies and potential eagles.
Yeah.
But that I think they did a really good job of that. We, and again, we'll get on to playing it a bit later on, but we got properly stumped because the event that we played in on the Monday was a shotgun start and they'd put us on the fifth tee.
Oh, God.
So we went to the fifth tee, which had the big board, which had the fifth on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got there and another group turned up, including Juan Postigo, the disability golfer that we've spoken to on a couple of occasions. And he was the one then eventually to direct us to say, oh, no, we're not playing the Solheim Cup rotation. We've gone back now to the old one.
Oh, my God.
So then we had to go and find the fifth, which fortunately was only over yonder, so it wasn't too bad. So the fourth or the first, that what it was for the Solheim this year, actually became our final hole, which was quite nice. It was like the finishing hole.
Is that the big drive over the water?
So we finished on that hole and it took a while to get to see it and stuff like that. But it was really cool. The stand was actually a lot bigger in person than it looked in telly.
Yeah, yeah. In telly.
I'm back in North now. and it was really cool to see how they'd gone about it.
Yeah. It was much better on the final day as well, because always my kind of fear of any kind of team event when you go and watch it is on the Friday and the Saturday, there's only ever like four groups on the course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's only like so many shots you're going to be able to see. And obviously all the crowds are following. And the crowds were so big. I was kind of like, do I really want to be walking around this course, like following these groups around and actually not being able to see much? But because of the way the slopes were around the greens, you did manage to get quite a few good vantage points. And we were a little bit worried after the first day.
Yeah, 4-0 down after the first session.
It wasn't what I would call a smooth start for Team Europe.
No.
There was a few worried kind of looks, because the last thing you want is like for it to be, for both sides, like the perfect scenario is it's a really close match and your team wins. Because that's when it's the most dramatic. That,
yeah.
If I was having my ideal scenario, I would have, I would have our team win.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like even
but in dramatic fashion as well.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't want to wipe out, just like,
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah. I think I would want to win by, maybe the first like seventh, win earlier, like the seventh pairing goes out and they win it by like a long way and you're like, great, let's all go.
Win on
like
the second day.
Euphoria or like relief that when you're watching a tight match and then you finally get over, just makes that feeling of the win just like so much better.
That anticipation and that kind of that nerve jangling tension, which was really evident on that final day. You don't get that unless it's a like a close match.
Yeah, but does it? Yeah, I guess you kind of like it was very hard fought of Europe to get back to where they were.
Yeah,
going into the final day, like you've then got that momentum, I guess, of having played really well, come back from a deficit to then go through and do it like sign it off right at the end with a big win. So yeah. I guess it makes sense.
No, that final day did really turn into a very classic, just like final singles day event of, they eventually split it 6-6. Yeah. That's exactly what Europe needed. But, you know, there was times in the morning where, like, in the first five groups that had gone out, Europe were up in four matches or something. Yeah. So you're just thinking and looking at it. And then all of a sudden, a couple of matches change. And then we got to a point where we were on the 16th and around the 16th and 17th and 18th for the final stages of the cup, which was really cool. And we're looking at the board and things have changed. And actually, you're looking at matches that it got to a point where we needed to win three of the last four. Mm. And think, you know, it's kind of cliche match play stuff, but things change so quickly. And, you know, one thing can, there's momentum was so evident when you're there. You see it on the telly and things, there always feels like these moments where even though there's players on different parts of the course, there's like 20 minutes where every American putt drops or every European. And it's really weird that kind of thing happens. But you did feel that whilst you were there.
Yeah, there's a really weird thing. So we pitched up on the 16th. It was like a hospitality pavilion that we went in a few times. Mm-hmm. And it had a TV kind of in there, a couple of TVs in there, TV just outside on the opposite side of the fairway, TV on 17. Blah, blah, blah. And for whatever reason, I don't know if like the electricity was like on a go slow day.
Had to go uphill.
Yeah,
for God's sake.
Like, in my understanding, electricity moves pretty quickly.
Most of the time.
Right. I'm not making this up. No. Like, no. If you switch a light switch on, it doesn't take 5 minutes for the electricity to reach the switch. Like reach the light bulb.
Yeah.
Like normally. So we hear this cheer from off yonder on the course. Mm-hmm. And it's a European cheer. Mm-hmm. You can tell the difference between European and US cheer. So that happens. We're like, oh, something's happened. And then you hear this cheer like near the 17th, where this other screen is. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Okay. And then we're looking at this screen on the 16th fairway, and they're starting to show what's happened. So everyone cheers on the 16th, and then we like look around into the pavilion, and it's just starting to play on there. So like the signal managed to weave its way down over the course of about a minute to where we were.
Wow.
It was a random thing.
Slow ripple effect that just eventually got to every telly.
If I can think about it from a logistics point of view, like my dad used to do sound for the European tour and lots of things like that. And I imagine what happens was the video and audio signals go from where it's happening live, they go to the truck where it's all being directed, and then they get pushed out to the screens. So maybe that process is getting like slightly longer each time. Yeah. And then eventually it gets to Sky and you're like, oh, look, the thing that happened just there is now happening on the TV.
Yeah.
The signals don't like travel by horseback. it should be pretty.
I remember pinging back and forth.
I remember once watching I believe it was England in a World Cup qualifier. It might have been Beckham's free kick against Greece. We had it on in two TVs in the house. In the kitchen, they're watching it on terrestrial on BBC. And in the living room, they're watching it on HD BBC on Sky. So it would happen here, and then everyone would react to it. And then everyone in the living room would get it like 5 or 6 seconds later.
Yeah.
So we did that classic thing of like, as someone was about to take a free kick, like they missed it, but we're all like, right, as soon as celebrate. He hits it, everyone go mad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then everyone in the other room was like, oh my God, what's happened? And he just skies it over the bar or whatever. But yeah, that the delay can happen.
Yep,
so okay. maybe that would be the reason.
Yeah, but anyway, that was happening. And by the...
What was it, by the way, that had happened that...
Oh, I think it was like head wall, like going off. By the way, Caroline head wall. Oh my God.
Headers.
What an absolute beast.
Yeah.
Unbelievable stuff. Like we were, so it was just to kind of put everyone in frame, like Europe won the Solheim Cup 2 years ago. And was it 3 years ago now because of COVID? Anyway, last time it was out, they won it. And to retain the cup, all we have to do is half the match, which gets it to 14 points each.
Yeah.
So going into the last day, it was 8-all after Europe fought back from that first day smashing. Well, first morning smashing. And it was so tight all the way through that Sunday when we were there. Like the tension was palpable. We went out, we watched a few matches. The cheers were great. Big shout out to the Swedish contingent of fans who came over.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Loads of them.
Honestly, it was like Stockholm light out there. There was so many Swedes. It was unbelievably fantastic.
Yeah,
and loads of American fans as well. I wasn't quite expecting that many to turn up. Yeah. It was very, very well supported on the American side. And it basically got past Gemma Driver, who kind of halved her match against Cheyenne Knight. And then all of a sudden, Celine Boutier didn't really play well. Kind of all that week, she gets beat by Angel Yin, who hit her like a 340-yard drive on that 16th hole.
Yeah, stomped it, yeah.
Honestly, she absolutely smashed it. Her caddy was loving life. Yeah. So, and then it gets down to Caroline Hedwall. Now, I don't know much about Caroline Hedwall, but what I do know is that she needs to go down in a match to really get the adrenaline flowing.
Yeah, one of those.
She needs to be up against it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back against the wall.
Mm-hmm. Like, she needs to feel that tension.
Yeah, she needs to be 2-0 down in extra time.
Yeah, exactly. So she went 3 down on the 12th, and everyone was like, against Ali Ewing, and everyone was like, well, this doesn't look like it's going to go our way. She wins the next two. Okay. She wins the next two. They basically halve the 15th.
Yeah.
And then on the 16th, where we were,
yeah,
she makes a birdie. Yeah. She rolls in this little cheeky one down the hill. Everyone goes mad.
And then a load of other people go mad. And then a load of other people go mad.
Like, the cheers start to ring.
Yeah.
She, what's the best word of describing this? She charges to the 17th tee. Like, honestly, I swear.
Protest march.
A possessed woman.
I swear, if like a small child had walked out in front of her, she would have noticed.
Yeah, knee to the face.
She'd have just gone through it.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
Like, a rhinoceros could have been charging towards her and she would have flicked it out of the way.
Like, said to the caddy, pick that up.
Yeah, she was on it. She birdies 17.
Yeah.
She wins 18. So she, like.
Did she eagle the last?
She won the hole because she was on the green for two, and Knight, I think, was making a... Oh, no, Ali Ewing, sorry, was making a big mess of it. So I think she just picked up.
Right,
So I think they had her down as a three, which makes it look like she went six under through six holes. She still went five under, really.
Yeah.
Well,
she was such a momentum change, and it was the atmosphere then really started to kick off. Madeline Sagstrom had lost her match against Vu kind of a few kind of holes ago, so that had already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Stark wins 2-1. Now, the reason that this becomes... Madeline Stark wins 2-1. Maya Stark, sorry. So the reason that becomes kind of like a bit more important is, bear in mind, this is in Spain.
Yeah.
This Solheim Cup game. Now, the penultimate group is Nelly Korda, literally the best player in the world.
The best player on the planet.
And Carlotta Sagander. Now, Carlotta's not been like firing on all cylinders recently. And it's her home Solheim Cup. Okay?
Yeah.
This...
And also imagine this, like you're playing in your home Solheim Cup. Your team have fought back from a ridiculous deficit on day one. And then you find out on the final day that you're playing against Nelly Korda. The equivalent is, you know, Rory or Prime Tiger.
Like, you're pulling the big dog.
Untouchable.
Yeah.
That is real pressure.
It is. And in front of your home crowd. Oh. I always think it's one of the very best things about like the elite kind of performers is when the pressure starts to mount is that they can use that to their advantage.
Right.
Rather than like most people, when they think about playing in front of a crowd, even a supportive home crowd, a lot of them can imagine that crushing feeling of it all getting on top of them and then whiffing everything.
It's like, you know, playing in a four ball in front of, you know, with your friends. Even that's you know that the pressure's there, but I can't even imagine what it's like when they don't want you to do well.
Yeah. But, and just like imagine, I mean, the home crowd obviously willing you on, but just getting to that point where you've got thousands and thousands of people around like a whole screaming you on and being able to channel that into your best performance.
Yeah, into good stuff rather than falling by the wayside, essentially. Yeah.
Oh, but she basically loses the 15th, which puts the match back to all square.
Yeah, and Korda just didn't get going.
Nelly Korda, I mean, she's elite.
Yeah,
but Sagander wins 16. The cheers go mad. Mm-hmm. Now this puts it basically at the point where if Sagander wins 17, she wins the match and she retains the cup. So everybody just descends on the 17th.
Yeah.
Everybody is there.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the tee. It's amazing. But it amazes me, and it will always amaze me how 10,000 people are going to be so quiet.
Yeah. Talk us through the geography of 17 for people who haven't seen it.
So par 3, from where they were playing, was 150 yards.
Yeah.
Very, very tricky pin, tied behind a bunker. Wind off the right, slightly into.
Mm-hmm.
Green is tiny bit raised above the tee, but nothing much. But it's just surrounded by bunkers. There's a massive hospitality grandstand to the right. There's a grandstand to the left. The entire back of the green is like a horseshoe hill.
Mm-hmm.
It's surrounded.
Okay. Yeah.
We are...
It's like 7-8 deep of people.
Yeah.
We're surrounded.
Okay. People are climbing trees.
Oh, literally.
Jacob is... Not naming names.
Up an olive tree right now.
I was up an olive tree. Yeah.
He's up an olive tree. I'm still by Michael Campbell, who's right next to the green.
Of course you are.
Randomly. And then a few other people. So I'm there. Everybody goes quiet. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I say to Fred...
That quiet when you're like... Yeah.
I say to Fred next to me, I'm like, just imagine she stuffs it. Just imagine what's going to happen here. So she hits this shot. You can kind of see she likes it a little bit. But there's one pitch, tiny bit of release, and it's like 2 foot. Oh. Everybody just loses it.
Mm.
Just goes mad.
Yeah.
Like it's a full-on like football crowd goal scream.
Louder than when she actually holds the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This is like...
Because it's like, this is it. Like, this is it. Corda kind of like pulls her tee shot a little bit left of the green. And I managed to get a really good video of like her chip because she lips out for a birdie.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks in all the way.
As soon as she hits it, the angle that Pete got is brilliant because she hits this chip and it's almost inconceivable how this thing does not go in. Because it just starts to break, and then just because it starts to, as I've said before about when we played it the next day, the greens were so tough, and we saw it with the chip that just started to lose a little bit of pace and then just took even more break.
Yeah, yeah,
and it was
like,
how it didn't go in. And she just like, crumbled to knees after it moved by. Because you wouldn't, you've seen things happen in sport that you don't expect to see, but it was highly unlikely that she was going to miss the putt.
Yeah.
But
I think we're quite glad because like Corda's chip went by like four or five feet and she held the return putt because that's what you want. Like, The last thing I think anybody wanted there because like Sagando was never going to miss her birdie putt. It was straight uphill, very short. But what you didn't want is for Corda to miss her putt and pick it up.
And then, or for her to have two putts from 2 feet.
To win the
tournament. I want the little bit of pressure.
Yeah, exactly. You want that like moment.
Make her putt it.
You want that moment. Yep. And anyway, she holds it.
Yep.
Kind of everyone goes mental again. Crowds invaded. And it was at that point we were like, okay, we've seen it. We don't need to hang around for the last match, which Lexi Thompson wins over Pedersen.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, well, let's go. Let's leave.
Do you feel like a bit, I don't know, not disappointed, but like if you're in that final match and yours isn't the one to decide it and you've just got to play, like you've just got to play down until you're done.
Yeah. I think this one was slightly different because Pedersen had a chance to still win the match and actually win it instead of it being like a tie and retain.
They'd already got the cup.
Yeah.
But it was like, how they were going
to
get it.
Yeah, exactly. So she did have a chance to, and she fought back as well because I think she was like four down with five to go. Mm. So she was pulling a few holes back. The thing that I thought of when the putt rolled in on 17 was all the people that probably perched up on 18 for about 3 hours and sat in the stands waiting for something to happen. And then literally nothing got to them. Like two matches got to them. I think it was like Hull's and Driver's match that got to the 18th. And they'd sat there all the time thinking they might see the end of the Solheim. And they were like further down.
Yeah, it's a gamble. You've got to take the gamble.
In such a way that when we were walking back, I got shoved to the side by some bloke in a suit thinking, who the bloody hell is this bloke? Oh, it's because it's the King of Spain was coming through. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I almost got clipped by the buggy as it whizzed by. I was basically like, Jacob got stopped. I was already like on the path. And the guy like with a suit came over, like literally put his hand on my stomach and said, oh, wait. And I was like, all right. But I was like, stood in the middle of the path. So the guy like looked left, looked right, was like, hang on, this is stupid. And just like give me a little shove, like onto the other side of
now,
the path.
Now you're solid, so this guy must have been an absolute
animal. He was actually like a little bit smaller than me, but even in the briefest moment that I was next to him, I could see in his eyes that he would not hesitate to rip my head off.
Yeah, he meant it.
Yeah.
When he said wait, he meant wait or die.
Yeah, it wasn't like a question.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
It was like,
or like, you good to stop?
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. It was wait, which was translated to stop.
Yeah.
And now. I was like, okay.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Anyway, just shoved me on. Yeah. And then I looked round and I was like, I recognize that guy because he was on the TV earlier.
Yeah.
And he was in there, and he was in there with like a few army guys. I wanted a hat on, think it might have been an admiral or something. And then it just kind of went down. It was a bit weird. It was. I've never actually seen a member of a royal family up close. He had a very well-maintained beard and a spotless baseball cap.
Interesting choice.
No crown.
Have you not been near a royal in our country?
Not like a king. I mean, I have had a meal with a member of the royal family. Don't want to talk about it.
I will.
It's under embargo.
It's coming soon to the channel.
Sign a waiver or something.
it was Zara Phillips and NDA. Mike Tindall. We had a long story. So after that, it was like, okay, let's get to the exit. And then this is maybe the only thing that I think the Solheim was potentially under a little bit of criticism for, was like the access in and out of the course. There's a big queues to try and get out and like get in and stuff like that. But we were obviously with like the local tourist board. So we kind of slipped out, got whisked into the bus.
Right, got you. Sorry, influencer's employee coming through. The hot tubs are waiting.
We got straight to the hot tubs. Yeah,
straight in hot tub.
Same hot tub?
No.
Separate
hot
tubs.
We had our own.
Okay.
I had my own hot tub. It was great.
Come on, behave yourself. Like, come on.
You're still working.
Hashtag influencer. But it was... Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. The amount of spectators and how they managed to organise everything in, I would say, one of the most unfriendly courses I've seen for spectators was fantastic.
Yeah,
I was a lot more worried. It gives me hope for the Ryder Cup.
So you played the course almost exactly a year ago. Was the course good?
The course was immaculate.
Was it hard?
It was awesome. The course.
Yeah.
The course was in a state of, I recall it as near perfection. Like, we're not talking any grass out of place here. We're talking everything beautiful. And we were in for a rude awakening. Because I've played courses just after tour events, just before tour events. I've played fantastic venues. I've never put it on greens like these.
Worse than the BMW.
By worse, you mean quicker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
not worse quality, but like worse control.
Mate, this is a podcast. Words matter here.
Okay. I'm really sorry. More difficult to putt on than the BMW.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Honestly, like they were so fast. So pace matters when you're putting, because pace dictates line. So if you hit a putt hard, it won't take the break. If you put it too soft, it may take the break a little bit too much. I've never put it on greens which pace and line are so interlinked and important that if you get one of them wrong, it just won't go in, because they ain't going to bobble back.
Yes.
And as soon, you know, it, the greens were, you knew. If you had a 20-foot putt, you knew 12 feet away if it was going in or not. They were that good. Because there was nothing that was going to deviate the putt. The biggest issue was downhill. I physically don't have the skill to stop or control pace on those greens, because I'm just not used to it.
Heavy handed, and he gives it a whack.
Yeah.
It's just like, but all of us who played it were the same. And then other than that, when we did get the pace, as soon as it starts losing pace on those greens, it just goes.
That was the biggest bit for me, is because you say that, you know, line and pace, you know, they go hand in hand essentially, and never so much on any other greens than these. But it wasn't that you had to take in the whole putt. It was that you had to think about it almost like in kind of small sections of like, well, at this pace, that line's good, but then the ball's going to get slower here, so it's going to take more. And like almost thinking like in sections of like, well, when it gets to the hole, and if I'm trying to die it in, well, it's going to take a little bit more break. So at the start, I'm going to have to... It was... I didn't hit any putts.
More maths, I don't think I wanted to hit any golf.
On the 17th, our 17th, I had a putt, and it was basically like it was like a 40 footer like down the slope, and I picked a point which was 12 foot away, and I was like, hit it to that pace, and it went past the hole.
Yeah, for players of their standard, the ladies who played in this tournament, that's probably what they want.
Oh yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
They want it to be fast and pure, and like, I want to hit it directly over this, you know, not that there's any blemishes, but like, I want to hit it over this blade of grass and for it to stay on that line. And I know the pace because I've been playing on it for the last week or whatever. For people of, I mean, still, like, for people of our standard, doesn't that just seem like really unfair?
No.
I mean, obviously,
like I've hit this exactly like you said. I've hit it over this 12-foot thing. Yeah. Oh my god, it's rolled straight over it. This is going to be really close. D-greened.
Yeah.
I don't want to like obviously. Yeah, we all play good and bad golf, like whatever. You know, we're not exactly massive practicers. I would say that, let's say you, Kieran, I think if you put it on these greens, I would say the first four greens you would have de-greened it.
You reckon?
I think we all would have.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. You putt very well as well.
Yeah. Well, like your putting, like you're a very like aggressive putter.
Yeah.
Like if it goes past like 3 or 4 foot, that's fine. Like those kind of putts on these greens. You'd hit it and it'd be like, oh, it's gone past. You'd look away and you'd be like, oh, God, it's on the fairway.
You needed to still be kind past. Of a gyre into the hole rather than a sort of hit with pace. Well, I mean, you could do both, I'm sure, but like to be sure, you needed to kind of hit the line to kill it in rather than have it go 3 or 4 past.
Did you catch... Oh, actually, you may not... When did that actually happen? Did you catch that hole in one or were you not?
No, so that was on the first day.
Yeah, we saw
Jazzy do that. She was there.
Yeah, she was behind, yeah.
She had a hole in one.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
No, that was on the 12th and I remember because when we saw it on the phones and I said, when we filmed there and we had a couple of goes at it and you were really close to getting one by running it off that bank. But on the tee, it doesn't... I remembered it looking more... slopey and that you could actually run it off when actually it doesn't seem like that when you're there. And where they put the pin, especially on the last day, there wasn't much space between that area to run it down for a hole in one chance, or you're in the greenside bunker and you've short-sided yourself on a shot that's going to be downhill on those greens. So the first day was the day to do it, and it was I wish we were there, because the only hole-in-one experience that I've ever been around in a tournament was when we were at the Waste Management, and we weren't even on the 16th, but we saw it happen. And like the eruption of like, you know, when a birdie was made around this course whilst we were there, it was cool. Hole-in-one would have been a whole nother like level.
Yeah. Different level.
Yeah, honestly, it was cool.
And also, it takes away you having to putt. So.
Yeah. That's the trick around here. Just hole it from your tee shot.
I'll tell you what, just hole them all from the fairway and then you don't have to worry about putting.
Well, I saw you do like a chip in. You had a chip in, didn't you?
Mm.
Yeah, and
that was on 10 on the par 3.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
The beauty of the... So my chip in when I'm practicing, it can be all right, be decent. And I really like tight lies because it gives you so many options. And... around those greens, they were shaved like greens, basically. Mm-hmm. So they were running about 8 or 9 on the stimp, and then the greens were running like 12. So like if you caught one and you nipped it really well, you could like control the spin, and you could. Oh, yeah. It was just.
But Fred was having a.
I was going to say it was really good watching Fred play around there, because he was just like nipping it about, and the control he has in his short game was, and putting as well. Actually, putting great. Yeah.
That man's got a high arse.
He's got a big ass.
That guy's got power.
How did you do, like in terms of like the, was it like a competition or tournament or?
Yeah, it was like a scramble. So try and keep the pace up. Which I think we might have finished about 17, 18 or something.
Yeah,
but yeah. I left the scorecard on the buggy, so we never really got to find out. We weren't.
You made the most. Scorable holes.
Oh, yeah.
Or you made the most birdies and eagles out of three of you.
Yeah. I had an eagle. Stiffed on a par 4, which is, I don't want
to. Mini driver. 260. Like little fade.
Go. Thanks for coming. But I don't like to brag. So we.
But let me talk you through it second by second.
Yeah. Let me talk you through it. Yeah. I'm going to talk you through all 6 seconds of that ball flight.
6.1.
But yeah, I don't know where we finished, but it was just like a nice treat to be out there. We tested out some new irons, and it was just a really good day. But we were running very late for the flight.
Did you almost not make it back here?
In looking back at it, we were fine, but there were points where I did think that we were not going to make it back. Which, to be honest with you, if we had to stay one more night in that hotel, I would have been okay with it. I would have. Oh, I'll go in the hot tub again. Okay, all right, fine. I'll hang around for a bit longer. No, it was. We were just running late for leaving the golf course, and I was checking on the app for the flight, and it was saying it was running on time, and I think it said that our gate closed at 5:15, and I think we entered the building for the airport at 4:20, 4:25. So essentially, a 50-minute turnaround to get to the gate. Now, I've been on flights, and I'm sure everyone listening and you guys have been on flights, where sometimes it runs really smooth and you just get through without any problems at all. Mm. And it's quite empty or quite chilled.
The dream, they call that.
The dream, yeah. And then one of those where you get there 3 hours early and then you've got to kill 2.5 hours because you're like, oh, I've got through everything. But this time we got around the corner and we were on a Ryanair flight and all of the check-in desks was just for every Ryanair flight.
Oh, that's right. Peter Finch still flies Ryanair, everyone. If you're thinking it was PJ's...
Humble this man.
If you're thinking it was PJ's but PF, it's not. All right, still flies Ryanair.
NetJet, if you're listening.
I just want to say that if it was my choice,
yeah,
I would not be on that Ryanair flight.
Mm.
So the flights were booked through the Costa del Sol Tourist Board.
Yeah.
Now, what happens, just to warn everybody, if you get a flight booked through a third-party agent onto Ryanair, you are subjecting yourself to, I'd say, about an hour and a half of pure hell as you try and check into that flight. Because what Ryanair does is it won't recognize a third-party email and a third-party booking reference. So you have to go through a separate piece of the Ryanair website where it asks you to do things like you basically got to post for a picture, you got to look left, you got to look right, you got to do all this kind of facial recognition stuff, you got to scan your passport in. Honestly, if you book a flight through a third party and it gets to Ryanair, it's just chaos. So we were running late to the airport. None of this had been sorted until like 2 hours before the flight anyway. If you don't check in before you get to the airport with Ryanair, they charge you like £6,000.
that's an accurate number.
For literally no reason. And like we get to this Ryanair queue and it's busy and we're like 50 minutes until we've got to get to the gate. We're like, we're never going to make this. And there's a queue to the side. It's like last minute check-ins. So at least they've got that there. There's a couple of people in there. And there's this Ryanair employee. And she stood there and we said, listen, this is our time. We're not going to make it through this massive queue. There's like 200 people in it. We've got to get these bags checked in. We've got to get through security. So can we get in this queue? And she was like, yes, let me check. Like pulls the cordon across. And this might maybe about, what, a 15-meter walk to the desk in this line. And I swear she had treacle on the bottom of her shoes. She was so slow getting to this desk, to the point where I looked down, I was proper tapping my foot, like subconsciously.
Oh, God.
And she gets down, she has a chat, like a conversation. It was like a conversation of, oh, what are you doing tonight?
What are you doing when you're off?
Yeah, how's Shelley? She getting on all right?
I would have blown my lid.
And I was like, everything was tapping at this point. And she comes back, undoes like the barrier, kind of walks towards us. Yes. That's fine. Have you ever seen Zootopia? Have you seen Zootopia with the sloths?
Sloths in the DVLA.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. So he sprinted down the bloody aisle to get there. So can you shake his head? Yes. Get to security. Obviously, we're carrying all the camera equipment. Oh. So you've got to separate into like 50 different boxes. That goes through. Fortunately, no one stopped us.
Pete, before we went through, Pete was like, I'm going to go behind you and hold people
up. I blocked the whole security.
You take everything out of that bag and make sure we do not get stopped.
Because you know what it's like? When you're loading stuff in, like everyone's crowding around because they want to get all their stuff in the boxes. So I was like, you go first. Got all the boxes. I set out my boxes, like literally across everything.
Good.
And was like,
hold off.
You carry on.
So he doesn't fly in private jets, but he will hold up the entire security crew to make his life easier.
It was one queue at Malaga Airport, quite frankly. I don't give a damn because we were in a rush. We needed to get through. And anyway, we finally made it through, managed to get to the gate, boarded the sweatiest flight imaginable.
Mm-hmm. Classic Ryanair.
Everybody knows Ryanair.
And then one lot off, the other plane lot back on, straight back to Manchester.
Crisps on your seat.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it? It's like they were getting off. They were getting off like the back and they were loading us through the front.
Oh, God bless Ryanair.
It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. They are cheap, but you know, you get the job done. You get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for.
Did I arrive there by plane? Yes.
Oh, actually, I forgot about this. I don't know if it was the same for you, Pete, but I think that for the first time ever on a flight, they evacuate the landing. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but they like pull out of the landing. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah. They went for a kind of circle round.
Yeah. But like we were going down and then all of a sudden you felt the plane like really kick on and move. And then all of a sudden the tannoy goes over and the that one of the hostesses kind of, the way she said it was a bit unnerving. She was like, the pilot has evacuated the landing. We'll give you more information in a moment. And we're thinking, oh my God, is one of the engines gone? I was like, it was really odd. But then
get me back to my hot tub.
The pilot then eventually did come on and say like, we've had to perform a blah-de-blah maneuver and we're going back round or something.
Did you see that there was a piece of news recently where it was an off-duty pilot who was on who was trying to go on holiday with his family, and the pilot who was supposed to pilot the plane didn't turn up or, you know, couldn't make it. So he contacted EasyJet or whoever it was and said, listen, I'm a pilot. I've got my license with me. I've got my like FAA or whatever it is, pass here or whatever. Hat. Yeah, I've got my hat. would you like me to fly the plane? Like, I'll just fly it there. You just have to find someone to fly it home because I'm staying there for 2 weeks or whatever. And they said, oh, we'll let you know. Put the phone down.
Yeah, like that feels like something that would never happen.
6 or 7 minutes later, they ring him up and say, yes, please. Please, could you fly the plane?
Really?
So he flies his plane, his jeans and his polo top. Right. I think there's a video, I think I may have seen it on TikTok, which is him making the announcement, like telling the stories. Like I'm a qualified pilot. I fly these planes all the time. I'm on my week off. I'm just trying to get on holiday. Shall we go on holiday? And now everyone goes, yeah!
I think there's like a tiny part of me that still would be a little bit like,
yeah,
you're a pilot, really?
Yeah, really?
No, that's the classic of like, is there a doctor on board? Can someone fly this plane?
Literally everybody who's used fake ID to get into a club was like, really, mate? Yeah. Like, can I see that license, please? Yeah. Is that a real hat?
You walk me through every button so I know that I'm safe.
No, what I want is for you to make an announcement that I don't know what you said at all. Okay, must be a pilot.
Yeah. What he should have done, like after everything was sorted, after he knew he was safe to fly, he should have come on and said, you know, I'm Jeff, I'm sitting in seat 21A. A pilot's not turned up, so I'm going to give it a go. See you in Malaga. Yeah.
Shall we go on holiday? I want to. Four shorts. Flip-flops.
I'm actually a pilot for the Red Arrows. Loop-de-loop, here we go.
Yeah. I mean, my license was suspended 3 years ago, but it's nothing big.
Drinking on the job.
Should we land inverted? Yeah. Didn't you watch that recently?
Quick barrel roll before we get there.
Good on him.
I wasn't too nervous about that. I have been on a flight, though, back from, I think it was with Friday. I think we're coming back from Spain, where we flew into Manchester, but it was like a storm that was going on. It was like grey cloud smashing it down, wind, plane was flying everywhere. And then we got very close to the runway. And then it like back up. It was very scary. I was very sweaty. What made it worse is that we were on the plane with, it was like a Rotary Club holiday or something. There was a lot of grey hair. There's a good like 20 to 30 kind of older women surrounding us. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it happened, everyone was like, so it instantly like put me on edge because it was like a real like whimper of fear from everyone. I was like,
now, is this plane haunted or are all of these passengers pigeons?
I was like, oh my God. And then that was horrendous, but we made it.
We made it.
This is the simulation.
Is this it?
The slight bad news for you is that you're about to get on another plane.
Yeah, things like 7 or 8 days time.
No, not you. Him.
Oh, him. Him.
I'm literally leaving here and I'm going home to wash my clothes
to go back again.
Get on a flight tomorrow with Brussels Air.
That's not real.
Yeah, which is an airline I've not heard of.
That's
before.
A type of sprout, mate.
That doesn't exist.
So. I'm not filled with complete confidence. I'm sure it's got two wings.
Brussels?
Brussels.
Okay, so as the place. Yeah. Right.
And we
not going to Brussels.
No.
No, we are. We're stopping off at Brussels. Every now and again, you get an airline that has to stop at their home airport before they go anywhere else.
We're just going to stop here so you can all go through duty free and then we'll get back on the road.
Up and then we'll go.
Yeah.
We'll pick up this guy to fly the plane.
It's like Icelandic Air.
So do you need to get off?
They have to stop at Reykjavik every time.
Do you have to get off the plane or are you just literally pulling in and then going off again?
Just touching the soil.
Yeah.
It's like racing to that lamppost and back.
Yeah, me and David have to spend like an hour in Brussels.
Oh, so you are getting off?
Yeah.
All right, so it's a changeover, basically.
Yeah, apparently there's something going on in Rome and direct flights in there.
It's pretty hard to come by.
That's all right, mate. Get off, couple of beers, nice bit of pate, back on the plane.
I would have imagined that the flight from Malaga Airport to Rome from on the Monday or the Sunday night would have been pretty cramped.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been quite something.
It's just all photographers with their gear.
Yeah.
Papers on there.
A lot of media folk.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Going out there. So, yeah, I've had a lovely day back home, but I'm going to get home. I'm going to wash. I'm going to spend, hopefully, a bit of the afternoon and the evening with Carly so she recognises who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just let them know, yeah.
And then, yeah, off to Rome, then off to the US the week after. Fingers crossed. We still need to 100% book that up.
We.
this is like Peter Finch's planning, like a week out. He's like, oh, have we booked those flights yet?
In all fairness, we have been planning this for like about a month. But the problem is, like, I know like nobody in Jupiter as far as like courses.
Yeah, we need a concierge.
Yeah, so
a contact.
I'm going through loads of different people to try and like book courses. And I think we'll kind of hear a little bit more back today. So.
And if you live in Jupiter, Florida, and have access to all the golf courses,
if you're a general manager somewhere,
comment below, and Peter Finch will come and shoot 65 around it. We promise.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So she'll be. We've actually got. Need to chat to you guys about it, actually.
Drama
about potentially staying another day, but we'll get to that.
Cool.
Got an option to play with somebody, like, maybe two people,
like East 17.
Maybe two people
stay another day.
It's not. It's
think
not.
I could take the pain.
Is that a
other Christmas song?
Yeah, I was going to say. Does that
technically
feel,
not? A Christmas
yeah, I was going to say that was what I was going to say. It's not actually Christmas.
It was a song that was number one at Christmas, but technically never mentions Christmas.
That's a Christmas song. It's like
they got snow in the video. Close enough.
It's like the
big woolly coat
theme tune of Donnie Darko. What was that? Mad World.
No, yeah, Mad World.
That was for Christmas number one.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was, wasn't it?
System of the Down was as well, wasn't it? Oh, no, yeah. Rage Against the Machine.
Imagine Toxicity as the Christmas number one.
Yeah, that'd be great. Get it going.
That was like it was like a protest in.
It was
against X Factor.
Wasn't it Joe McKeldry that they were?
Bless the show.
And with that, let's go to the Ryder Cup. Now, there's not although all four of us are here, there's not going to be guest a player on this episode of the Rough Cut Golf Podcast because we have our Ryder Cup preview show, which is coming out, I believe, tomorrow or the day after.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow. So hold on for that because there is guest a player on that episode, not on this one.
That's a good one as well.
It's a beaut.
It's a very good one.
Mm.
Good luck.
Mm.
Good luck at home.
Bit of foreshadowing there.
Yeah.
So I don't think got much to add. Kieran, do you want to get involved? And
do you want to say your sixth word of the podcast?
Sorry, mate. I really don't feel very well. So
go home, do some tracers in bed, and eat some soup.
Yeah, I don't feel very well.
Well, lucky that we're going to get the new editor of the team to do the podcast this afternoon.
Yeah,
aren't we?
I'm looking forward to meeting.
So you don't even have to worry about it.
Can't say about that. Right. So that, I guess, is the podcast over. I am going to head off to Rome. Kira's going to head off and have a poo, probably.
Nodding.
I just want to say it was a massive thank you to everyone who helped organize the trip over to Solheim Cup. It was a fantastic experience. It was amazing to see you retain the cup. And hopefully, when we get out to Rome, it'll be the same. We will see you tomorrow for the Ryder Cup podcast preview. And we'll see you next week for the roundup.
Oh, yeah. Come on, Europe.
Sounds good. Yeah, come on, boys.
A Europe 1-2-2?
1-2. 2-0. I get what you meant.
Let's win both.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a slow whimper of an end. Okay, guys. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.